Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Call into us today for your flu and COVID vaccines at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So we're back with our beginner's guide to some of the best music stars of all time. And this week it's George Michael's turn. So Edel Coffey is with me in the studio, and I think we're going to spend the next few minutes talking about how in love with George Michael we were when we were about 10, 11, 12. Same experience?
You see, we are almost the same age. So yes, growing up in the 80s, George Michael was just the number one heartthrob, as well as, you know, one of the best songwriters around. But yeah, he was a complete dreamboat. Yeah. And he was also writing the best songs of the era, you know, all those hits, the early Wham hits, which were in the very early 80s, like Wake Me Up Before You Go Go, Everything She Wants, so many brilliant songs, song after song after song. But he was a teeny bopper kind of icon, wasn't
Absolutely.
He?
Absolutely, he was an idol. Now, there are some people listening to us who are probably of the same age going, no, didn't like him, it was just chewing gum pop.
I was into Joy Division as well. But look, all I'm saying is that...
I was cool too.
If you know anything about music, if you know anything about melody, if you care about music at all, you simply cannot deny that George Michael was one of the most gifted songwriters and singers of his era.
He was a hit maker.
Completely.
Pure and simple. And you watched the Netflix documentary, which I watched as well, obviously, because like, what else would I be doing? A big Wham fan back in the day.
Yeah.
But that friendship between the two of them, there was a real joy to how they became successful, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Because it was born out of just there were two lads.
Schoolboy stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
George Michael and Andrew Ritchie met when George Michael's family moved to the area where their school was. And they weren't the most likely of friends, because George described himself as this sort of like a chubby Greek kid, and Andrew Ritchie was the cool one. But they hit it off, they loved music, and they decided they were going to start a band. And the band became Wham! And it was just, their success was unbelievable. And watching that documentary actually just reminded me of how brilliant he was. I kind of watched it as a sort of, oh, let's watch this light thing tonight, you know, nothing too heavy. And by the end of it, actually, ironically, I felt so depressed, because I was so sad for the loss of him and the loss of his talent, and the realisation that actually it was quite difficult for him to be this pop star, not only because of all the fame stuff, but also because he was such a brilliant songwriter, and he knew he was.
Mm-hmm.
And it meant so much to him to be appreciated as a brilliant songwriter. And he did eventually get all those Ivor Novello awards for his songwriting. But a lot of people just saw him as this guy in the shorts and the luminous tops with the slogans on the T-shirt and the big blonde hair.
He was very happy to play that game for a while. But not for very long. Like, he became, it seems, frustrated enough with the whole Wham thing and went out on his own, didn't he?
Yeah, and that is kind of, in my memory, it all happened, Wham lasted a long time, but in reality, it was just a couple of years,
yeah.
It was just a few years. And they only had two albums, and a lot, like some of the albums were filler, really, you know, so it was short-lived. And he did, like, even Andrew Ridgely says that in the documentary, said George Michael sort of, he kind of just had this exponential growth as a songwriter, and Ritchie realised rapidly that, okay, this guy is way out of my league. He's hugely talented. I can't write songs like this. Whereas George Michael was just like sitting on the couch, and then he'd run out of the room and write a song and it would be a number one hit.
Yeah.
You know, they were just falling out of him. So yeah, he did need to outgrow that pop star sort of role. And when he released his solo album, Faith, that was really a line in the sand. He changed his image, he changed his look, he changed his songwriting. The first single off that was I Want Your Sex, which is really such a dreadful song. It's the only song of his, I think, that is really bad. But it was there to do a job, which was to say, I'm back and I'm completely
and I'm
different.
Not Mr. Wham.
Yeah.
Can we just reverse back a little bit to Careless Whisper?
Oh, of course.
Tell us the story behind how Careless Whisper was born and recorded.
It's interesting, because that was like, it sold, I think, 25 million copies. It's one of his most successful singles. It was recorded while he was still in Wham, but It was released as a George Michael song, or Wham featuring George Michael. It was all very blurred at that time. But that song, he wrote it, he got the idea for it before the band were signed or anything like that. He was working as a DJ, he was getting on the bus, and the sax, the classic sax riff came to him. And he said he had that in his head for a few months. And he based the sort of lyrics on a fictional idea of dancing with a girlfriend and knowing that you were cheating on her, which came from his own life as a teenager, where he suddenly, you know, girls started to notice him. He was in this band and he suddenly had all this success with girls and he was two-timing everybody. But, you know, there was no emotions really involved, he said. But he came up with this song and he knew it was a hit, and he demoed it and he demoed it again. And then he went to America to Muscle Shoals Sound Studio, and he worked with this huge producer called Jerry Wexler, who was a hit maker and a legend. And he kind of was intimidated by him because he did the recording, he created this song, but the production was flat. It sounded dweeby. It didn't sound like it had the energy he wanted. And for me, this is really representative of his sort of incredible vision as a songwriter. He's one of those guys that had the symphony in his head. He knew how a song should sound. And that's why he was such a great producer, because he knew how everything should sound. He knew what should be where, and he knew the saxophone was wrong. He knew the production was wrong. He had the courage and the sort of presence of mind and the vision to go home and record it himself. He said, I'm just going to do it myself. And the result was astonishing.
We're doing lip syncing, we're swaying, because you just can't not. Now, in advance of us playing this next clip, I have to apologise, because it is a Christmas song. But this for me is...
Don't apologise. It's last Christmas.
It's last Christmas. One of the most important Christmas songs, or Wham songs for me, because I watched this when I was a child at home in Laois, watching Top of the Pops, going, one day, George Michael will be throwing snowballs at me.
In my face.
Did you see in the documentary that they were all actually
locked.
Drinking?
Yes.
They just kept pouring the wine and pouring the wine. That's why it looked like such good fun, you see. And
exactly.
We all wanted to be in it.
The director had this great idea to make the wine real wine. So they all just, you know, performed and went mad. But that song, listening to that song there, I know we're joking about him, but there was a particular quality to George Michael and to his songwriting, and particularly to his voice, which was pure emotion. I think he had this lexicon of emotion that could reach people. And I really do think that's part of his appeal, and why he people loved him so much, was because he translated our feelings for us. And every song, every single song, even the most upbeat, happy songs, they all had that layer of maybe melancholy or pathos or something there that just made it so rich in terms of human emotion. And his voice was... There was
incredible.
Always something so yearning about his voice, wasn't there?
So then 1986 comes along and they decide to call it quits. No big fight, no big argument. They were still friends. They just went their separate ways after that big Wembley gig.
Mm-hmm. And Andrew, that's one of the most beautiful things I think about that documentary, is Andrew Ridgeley just had pure love for George Michael and respected him so much, and could see that his talent was enormous and that he had to go out on his own. So they had this huge gig at Wembley, a farewell gig. They had a farewell single, which was The Edge of Heaven, which performed well, and they went out on a high, and that was that. And George Michael went on to be this huge star, as we know, but he also was plagued by so many emotional issues. He lost a great love early on. We all know about his sexuality now. He was closeted, not to his personal friends, but he was closeted publicly. Yeah,
and he only came out after that incident where he was arrested and fined for lewd behavior.
Yeah, and that was in America. And he was... it sounded like he was entrapped by a cop who, you know, it was this... he called it "You show me yours, I'll show you mine" kind of thing in the public toilets. But he had an amazing response to that, which was to say that, you know, I'd just like to say... he came out and made a statement saying, I don't feel any shame and I don't think it's something to be ashamed of. And it was a really powerful statement at the time, just like, you know, all I feel is stupid for being caught out like this in this manner. And later on his Desert Island Discs interview, he said that he thinks that was almost a kind of deliberate, an unconscious deliberate act on his part to out himself, because he felt like he was living fraudulently. And that's one of the other things that comes through in his music and in his life, was his honesty.
Let's hear some more music now. I'm going to go back to after the Wham split. So in 1987, George Michael reemerges with his first solo album, Faith. So then that was 97. 98 came the arrest. And then he said, look, this is who I am. No more hiding anymore. And then he had that joyful track.
Outside.
Outside. Will we hear a bit of that? And then let's talk about it.
Think I'm done with the sofa.
See, I would have thought that joyful celebration of his sexuality would have led to a period where he was really happy and, you know, happy in his own skin. But it didn't.
Yeah, I don't think so. And I like, that song really just shows his intelligence. You can't be that funny without being really, really clever. Like the lines in that song where he's talking about service the community and he says, but I already have. And it's just so tongue in cheek, so funny. And it was all about the video. The video was set in a public urinals and it converted into a disco and there were cops kissing each other. And it was just, it was so subversive and funny. But yeah, he never, ever seemed to achieve personal happiness. You know, he had long-term partners. He lost an early partner, which was a Brazilian guy he met when he was still in his 20s. Anselmo was his name. And he died of an AIDS-related disease. And they were only together something like 3 years, I think. And he was sick for maybe two of those years. But he describes that guy as the love of his life. And he wrote Jesus to a Child about him. And I don't think he ever really got over that loss.
Yeah, and then we move into the 2000s. So we had the final album, Patience, that was 2004. And then we start to hear about his struggles with addiction.
Drugs, yeah. I mean, he smoked a lot of cannabis. He was being arrested time and time again for possession. He was being found slumped in his car. He was crashing into Photoshop. You know, all sorts of like small crimes, really, but you know, things that
just a sign of somebody
was wrong.
Yeah, in a desperate place.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we had the news in 2016 on Christmas Day.
Yeah. Like so tragic that he died. And again, he died of natural causes. It was a heart-related death. But again, you have to think that those years of drug addiction and drug use must have had an impact. And what's interesting about the time that he died was he hadn't released new music for a long, long time. And it just goes to show how timeless he was, how present he was in our charts, how timeless his music was, because it felt like his music was played all the time at that point and is still played now, obviously, now that he's died. We play it a lot. But at that time, he was constantly in the charts, or not in the charts, but in the radio play A-lists and playlists. So it felt like he was constantly present, but he hadn't released anything new for ages.
Today is the day for a best of George Michael long listening
session. I
listened
to everything on my drive up here this morning. I listened to three albums back to back and it was so good. And in traffic, I know people were looking at me going, what is your one doing? But I was belting it out with all of my heart.
A true fan, Adele. Thank you so much. Adele Coffey there for on that tribute to George Michael. We'll take a break back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.